Welcome to this American Society of Hematology podcast for the hematologist, ASH News and Reports. In this installment, the hematologist editor-in-chief, Dr. Shaji Kumar, has a conversation with contributing editor, Dr. Saad Usmani. They discuss Dr. Usmani's year's best coverage in which he describes the past year's breakthroughs in immunotherapies for multiple myeloma. They focus in particular on B-cell maturation antigen, BCMA, targeted therapies, including chimeric antigen receptor T-cell, CAR-T, and bispecific T-cell engagers. The editors discuss data presented as recently as the 2022 ASH Annual Meeting, as well as issues surrounding toxicity, patient relapse, and the future of bispecifics and CAR-Ts. Dr. Saad Usmani is chief of the Myeloma Service and a member of the Department of Medicine at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. He indicated no relevant conflicts of interest. Dr. Shaji Kumar is a professor of medicine in the Division of Hematology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He indicated no relevant conflicts of interest. Please note, ASH does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, or opinions, and disclaims any representation, warranty, or guarantee as to the same. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the conversation.
Thank you, Dr. Usmani, for joining me on this podcast for the hematologist. We are going to be chatting about some real interesting changes that's coming in the field of multiple myeloma with respect to immunotherapies.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Kumar. You know, it's a privilege to be part of this podcast and talk about, you know, all these advances we're seeing in our field to the benefit of our patients.
So maybe we can start off with a little bit of background. I guess, you know, immunotherapy is not new to myeloma. We've been trying to do allogeneic stem cell transplant vaccinations and dendritic cell therapies for some time. But I think the past 5 years has seen some dramatic progress with respect to immunotherapies, particularly bispecifics and CAR-Ts. Maybe we'll start off from there and see what your general perspectives are on how that has evolved over the past few years.
Certainly, Shaji, I think, you know, we've seen a lot of advances in, you know, CAR-T cell therapies in myeloma, and that whole interest, excitement started with, you know, some of the early CAR-T data, maybe 5-6 years ago, that we started to see with, you know, targeting the B-cell maturation antigen or BCMA. And, you know, it almost felt like science fiction at that time. The early data by Dr. Kochendorfer were presented. We saw the clinical signal, but there were safety concerns. But then there were so many constructs being presented, you know, with ide-cel and cilta-cel and subsequently orva-cel, that we started to see, you know, clinical activity, started to learn how to manage the side effects like cytokine release syndrome. And that's what really propelled, you know, those therapies to eventual, you know, FDA approval of ide-cel in, you know, the year 2020 and then, 2021, and then, you know, with cilta-cel in 2022. So a lot of good has come from all that experience. And then bispecifics, you know, they have also surprised us with not just the clinical activity, but the safety profile in terms of, you know, that cytokine release syndrome that we see is quite, you know, appears to be quite manageable, much, much better than the CAR-Ts. I guess we are in a phase of a lot of exciting therapies, but, you know, we can pick and choose which therapies might be relevant to different patients.
Absolutely. Now, I think, you know, as you said, I think there have been some really spectacular results with these bispecifics and CAR-Ts. And I think we were all quite skeptical, as you said, in patients with advanced myeloma with really compromised immune status, whether these immunotherapies are really going to work. Can you maybe just elaborate a little bit on the mechanisms and the targets in the context of myeloma that you've been looking at, both from a bispecific and CAR-T perspective?
Certainly. I think the most data we have had for, you know, several years from the mid-2010s onwards is for B-cell maturation antigen. With respect to CAR-Ts, you know, I mentioned that ide-cel and cilta-cel are FDA approved, but we have, you know, other BCMA directed CARs, even allogeneic products that are in clinical development. And the mechanism of action of CAR T cells is essentially we take patients, you know, for the autologous CARs, we take the patient's T cell and introduce, genetically engineer them to start recognizing the B cell maturation antigen, which is highly expressed on mature B cells and plasma cells. And then, you know, reintroduce this product into patients after giving patients lymphodepleting chemotherapy. And when these BCMA-CARs are energized or activated with co-stimulatory domains that are added to that engineered component, and when they engage the BCMA, they get activated and do the, you know, myeloma cell kill that way. The bispecifics are a very interesting concept. It's not a new concept. It's been around for almost like 40, 45 years, but it's now coming to fruition for so many different blood cancers and even on the solid tumor side, where the antibody structure can be either a whole antibody or a fragment of antibody, in which case, you know, the bispecific will be called a T-cell engager or a cell engager, I guess. And one part of, you know, that structure can recognize a protein on the cancer cell surface. So in case of, you know, myeloma, it could be B cell maturation antigen. And more recently, we've seen, you know, G protein coupled receptor or GPRC5D being utilized, you know, as the target. And the other part recognizes CD3 on T cells. So that's the bispecific part of it. The idea is the antibody latches onto the cancer cell, the other part latches onto the T cell, and then the T cell does the myeloma cell killing. And that's the concept. And in terms of targets, I mentioned, you know, BCMA, but then, you know, this GPRC5D is the new kid on the block. And we are all, you know, excited about more than one product that's now being, you know, clinically developed with that.
Yeah, certainly. I think the ability to have different targets and how we can leverage these platforms to go after different targets would have, you know, implications, I think, particularly in a disease like myeloma, where we need multiple therapies over the course of the disease. Now, as you mentioned, we already have two CAR-T products that are in the market, the ide-cel and cilta-cel. Both were approved in an accelerated fashion based on some of the phase 1-2 studies. Now, in your own practice, what has been your experience with these two products in terms of how would you choose one over the other, or are there specific patient characteristics that would make you lean towards one versus the other?
Honestly, you know, Shaji, the challenge with both the products has been the ability of the companies to manufacture the products. So, you know, we really have not had the chance to actually pick and choose which products. I think both the products were approved based on, you know, single arm accelerated approval status. And these data sets are both showing good activity, but there are, you know, differences between patient populations. So cilta-cel, you know, appears on paper to have better response rates and better DFS than ide-cel, but because we have paucity of data comparing the two, in clinical practice, we try to get our patients whatever slots are available on a monthly basis. We won't get head-to-head comparisons, but as we get clinical experience with these two products, we can potentially do some real-world evidence kind of studies to see which patient populations may benefit from one versus the other.
The lack of availability of the slots clearly is a big challenge. What are the other challenges that you are facing trying to get CAR-T to your patients, both in terms of the requirements for the number of lines of therapy or having them come to a larger center and so forth?
The CAR-Ts are only limited to the transplant cellular therapy centers, and we have a very big country with a wide geographic spread. So while we revel in the excitement of, you know, these wonderful therapies that can bring deep responses to our patients, I think the reality is that, you know, many patients may not have access because of where they live and how far away they are. And then, you know, the other challenge, Shaji, which I'm sure you face as well, is once we have the slot, you know, the timing of controlling the disease for the patients who need it most becomes an issue for us. So the patients have to be in the right kind of like time frame in their disease course to get the treatments. And the third thing that you mentioned, you know, very, you know, rightly so, many of our patients, you know, who need this therapy may become exposed or refractory to the three main classes of drugs, proteasome inhibitors, immunomodulatory drugs, and anti-CD38 monoclonal antibodies within the first three quote-unquote lines of treatment. And the current approvals are for these therapies to be given after at least four lines of treatment, and the patients have to be relapsed, you know, refractory and exposed to those drugs. So I think that becomes more of a conundrum, clinical conundrum for us. You know, interestingly, while that applies to the patients here in the US and Europe, patients can get CAR-Ts after three lines of treatment, with the rest of the drug exposure requirements still being there. many challenges, a lot to unpack with the simple question that you asked, Shaji.
No, it's certainly challenging times with the use of CAR T. But those challenges that you brought up also comes at an interesting time when we have one bispecific antibody that has been approved in the form of teclistamab. It only becomes more complicated in terms of how we choose therapies. But how would you compare and contrast the bispecific antibody with the CAR T?
The way that I would frame this is for a lot of our patients who need a BCMA-directed treatment, especially now that the BCMA-directed antibody-drug conjugate has been withdrawn from the market, belimumab, mafodotin was withdrawn from the market. I think this FDA-approved bispecific teclistamab is a welcome addition to our armamentarium. However, the way that teclistamab has been approved, you know, the label requires inpatient observation of patients during that period where the patients can get cytokine release syndrome. And that becomes a logistic issue. I think for the bigger cancer centers, that's not a major issue. We can still, you know, manage the logistics. But the real benefit of bispecifics would be out in the community because this therapy is not required to be given at a transplant or cellular therapy center. With the right logistics, I think colleagues in the community would be able to deliver this therapy as well. It does pose logistic challenges, Shaji, and I want to get a sense of how you at Mayo are dealing with it too.
Yeah, certainly. I think you bring up the question of especially with the REMS program that comes with the bispecific antibody and the need for hospitalization. So one of the approaches that we have taken, and I suspect others have too, is to use some of the remote patient monitoring tools to try and keep the patient close to the medical center, but still not in the hospital per se, and still be able to monitor them for early signs of CRS, which can then trigger an admission at that point in time. I think, though, again, maybe with more experience, we might start using some of the prophylactic strategies, like what was recently presented at the ASH meeting, giving prophylactic medications to try and decrease the CRS. And that might be one way to make it more accessible to the community practices as well.
No, I completely agree, Shaji. And then with teclistamab, as well as with other bispecifics, you know, for BCMA, we have, I think, 5 or 6 other products that are coming very quickly down the pike. What the investigators have started to do is to explore that outpatient management strategy and to do this, you know, the data with, I think, an outpatient management with prophylactic tocilizumab with FCRH5 directed bispecific called cevostamab, you know, the data that were presented. I think all of those will make bispecifics accessible to our colleagues in the community over the next 2-3 years.
So in your experience, has the toxicities that you have seen pretty similar to what has been described in the clinical trials? And what are the more important ones that you try and you know, discuss with the patients before you put them on these treatments?
For CAR T cell therapies, I think it's been, you know, more or less a similar kind of an experience. Bispecifics, I think, are a little early, but for both, I think the long-term infectious complications are the ones that, you know, I have a discussion with patients. I think the CRS neurotoxicity signals that we see tend to occur earlier in treatment, and that's when we are paying a lot of attention to patients. Many eyes are looking at the patient's care during that time, but I think it's especially with the bispecifics, the long-term side effects where opportunistic infections have been seen, viral reactivations has been seen. We need a lot of data on that aspect. And this is where, you know, it's important to have those discussions with the patients about the possibilities of that happening.
But unfortunately, I guess for myeloma, we still see most of these patients relapsing after these treatments. What's your take on some of the data that has been presented with respect to the mechanisms of resistance and how we could potentially overcome those?
I think for, you know, BCMA-directed treatments, it's been quite intriguing that it's not typically the loss of BCMA, but, you know, as an antigen on cancer cells, but, you know, how the T cells and the immune microenvironment engages with the cancer cell and the therapy that we're introducing, that appears to be, you know, a very interesting signal that we see. We've seen with, for example, with teclistamab in the MajesTEC-1 study, this overexpression of, you know, checkpoint molecules, as well as an increase in CD38 positive Tregs in patients as a potential potential mechanism of why the T cells are not doing what they're supposed to be doing in patients, which I found fascinating. I think we're still learning what the mechanisms may be for the CAR T cell therapies, because it's, as we've seen with the cilta-cel experience, it's not about the persistence of CAR Ts. And for GPRC5D, I think, you know, we're still learning. What do you think, Shaji? What are some of the other ASH data that spiked your interest?
No, I think the mechanisms, one thing that is clear from both what we have learned from BCMA and to some extent the GPRC5D is that the loss of antigen, as you said, is not the primary driver of resistance or relapse. It seems somehow the immune escape is happening in these patients. The question is how much of that is driven by the tumor itself or something that's innate to the immune system of the given patient. And the other interesting thing too is I think the data we saw at ASH with respect to patients responding to a bispecific after CAR T and responding to a CAR T after bispecific suggests that these are not absolute changes. I mean, in the sense there are obviously multiple different mechanisms in play, not all of which are compromised in the setting of resistance to one of these platforms. You know, talking about the relapse, of course, it's more of an issue because we are using this in the late line and patients have become refractory to everything. But as the field evolves and the clinical trial data starts coming out, and hopefully we'll be hearing about some of those this year, where do you really picture bispecifics and CAR Ts being used in myeloma, let's say 5 years from now?
I feel that, you know, we will likely see, you know, both these modalities moving into earlier lines of treatment. We already have some data in earlier lines of treatment and even in the frontline setting with CAR Ts, you know, in early relapse setting with bispecifics in combination with other therapies. And, you know, there are clinical trials that are already ongoing, the randomized phase 3 studies where we are going to be employing, you know, CAR Ts in the frontline setting and others planned with bispecifics. So I think we're moving into a phase where we'll see these therapies in the frontline setting. The challenge for us will be looking at the safety signal and seeing if we can treat patients for a defined duration of treatment with sustained MRD negativity as a goal. And I know that's an area of interest, you know, for you as well, Shaji. And you know, many of us are thinking about how to design those kind of studies. I think it's an exciting time, honestly, you know, just looking at where the field is going, where we might be moving away from a continuous therapy model to a fixed duration model for myeloma because of all these exciting advances we've made in the therapeutics.
Absolutely. No, I think you're so right on. I mean, with all these multiple different mechanisms of action, if you can get the vast majority of the patients to a deep MRD negativity, then I think we will be able to give the majority of the patients, except for maybe the ultra high risk patients, some time of therapy. Which then I guess brings up the million-dollar question in a way, right? Will it allow us to cure myeloma?
I hope so. I think, you know, the fact that we're actually talking about, you know, the cure word, which was not something that we thought would ever happen, you know, when 15, 20 years ago. I do feel that we would be able to get our patients to functional cure, you know, especially the standard risk patients. You know, it's very difficult to define cure in an older patient population, but functional curability is something that we can certainly aspire for. And, you know, you raised the point about, you know, the ultra high risk patients. I think that's where some of our work is still needed. And I'm not confident that we can say we can, you know, even functionally cure those patients, but that's something that we have to work on.
Thank you so much, Saabed. This has been really an informative discussion on what is probably going to be one of the most exciting therapies that's going to evolve over the next few years in myeloma.
No, thank you so much for having me, Shaji. It was really fun talking to you about these futuristic things and hope we can reflect on this in a few years when we've actually achieved these goals.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this podcast of the American Society of Hematology. For more information, visit www.hematology.org. Subscribe to this podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Join us in February for another installment of the Hematologist Podcast.